Well, hello, hello. Welcome back to Cocktails and Killers. I'm Heather.
I'm Lena.
And today we are going to talk about Juana Barraza, otherwise known as La Mata Viejitas.
Hey, and tell me what that means in English, please.
Little old lady killer.
Well, I think I prefer it in Spanish.
Yeah.
I feel like we should tell everyone this is season 2, episode 3, but episode 3, part 2, because we literally recorded the whole thing yesterday and then found out we had some sort of audio issue.
Yeah. The whole thing was completely ruined.
Yes. So we're doing this the second time around just because we love you all so much and we want to make sure that you don't miss out on anything.
Yes.
So round 2.
More quality audio.
Hopefully.
Juana was actually a Mexican serial killer.
I find that so interesting. Hispanic lady. Yeah. And a woman.
Yeah.
This is really
cool. I mean,
cool.
That's like a real minority there.
I know. It really is. This is exciting.
Yeah. So she was born on December 27th, 1957.
So she's like about my mom's age.
Yeah. I think she's, let's see.
Because my mom was born.
She's about 3 years older than my mom,
yeah,
I think.
My mom was in 52.
Four years older. Yeah. She was born in Hidalgo, which is this rural area, like a small area north of Mexico City. Mm-hmm. Her parents were Trinidad Barraza, which was her dad, and her mom was Justa Samperio. She was an alcoholic prostitute. Yeah. The dad, for a while, he was pretty much just a drunk. And supposedly fathered over 30 children throughout his years.
Man, I can't even imagine that many fucking kids.
I mean, at some point, I think he straightened himself up a little bit. He did odd jobs, but he eventually ended up becoming a police officer.
I wonder if he was a good one or a bad one.
Yeah, I don't know. I couldn't really find a lot about him, but he met his wife, Justa, when she was only 13 years old and he was 18.
Mm-hmm.
She didn't really have much of a home when they met, so he offered to actually take her in.
So he probably was just an out for her, I guess, out of a bad
probably.
Life. Sounds like.
Yeah. Which, an alcoholic prostitute, I don't think it got that much better. The couple ended up living together for about 4 years, and during this time they had 2 children. The first was Angela, and then 2 years later Juana was born. When Juana was only a couple months old, Justa actually left Trinidad for a married man named Refugio Samperio. She ended up leaving Angela with the dad, Trinidad.
Oh, so she left the oldest one.
Yeah, she left the oldest one with the father,
okay.
And she took Juana with her.
Mm. That's so fucked up.
I know.
Can't imagine.
Here's how it gets more messed up. Refugio, the married man, was actually involved with her mother.
I remember that now, you saying that. That's so gross.
But he turned his attention to his stepdaughter, Justa, instead.
So gross.
He ended up raising Juana as if he were her, or as if she were his own child.
Mm-hmm.
She even ended up taking his last name. Her biological father, Trinidad, actually wasn't in her life at all.
Ever.
Mm-mm. She barely knew him.
So I guess she didn't have a relationship with her sister either?
Not as far as I could find.
Mm-hmm.
I guess that, I mean, that's just terrible to split up.
It is.
Siblings like that.
Reminds me of Dahmer, when his mom left and took.
And took the brother.
Mm-hmm.
Was his name David or something?
Something like that.
Yeah.
Yeah.
In childhood, Juana actually never learned to read or write. She had a not so great relationship with her mom. She barely spoke to her when she was a child.
That's so sad.
I know. Justa had very little empathy for her daughter or the two other children she ended up having with Refugio. They lived in poverty. Juana actually was not allowed to go and play outside. Her stepfather prevented her from getting any sort of an education. He thought that it was useless for a woman to become educated when she was just going to grow up and become a housewife.
God, fucking mentality, bro.
Patriarchy, man.
I hate that shit.
It's disgusting.
It is.
And because of all this, you know, Juana never had any type of formal schooling. She wasn't able to read or write anything other than her name.
I can't even imagine going through life like that.
I know. Well, and I mean, you know, back in the day, a lot, like our grandparents and stuff, never finished school. Like, I think my grandfather has a third grade education.
Yeah, I think both mine went through eighth grade.
Yeah. I mean, it's just crazy to think about. Mm-hmm. Wasn't that long ago.
It's messed up.
Yeah. So when Juana was 12, her alcoholic prostitute of a mother pimped her out to a man named Jose Lugo in exchange for 3 beers.
I have a 13-year-old, so, like, that's a child, so I can't even imagine what a 12-year-old girl being pimped out by her mother.
I can't fathom the
trauma. I wish that this cunt is one that Juana kills, because clearly she fucking deserves it.
She's
garbage.
Garbage.
Garbage. 100%.
Jose would end up abusing Juana for the next 4 years. He impregnated her twice, once when she was 13, and then again at 16 years old. Both of those pregnancies actually ended up in miscarriages.
Well, I mean, she's a fucking child.
I know.
You know?
Jose used her for sex and raped her repeatedly. When she was 18, she actually got pregnant for a third time, and this one went to term.
It was viable.
Yeah, and she gave birth to her first child, which was a son, and his name was Jose Enrique. A couple months after Jose was born, Juana was actually rescued. There are different sources that say different things mm-hmm. about who it was that actually came for her.
It wasn't her fucking piece of shit mom.
No, it wasn't. It was either her stepfather or his brothers that showed up to Jose's house, and they refused to leave without her.
Should have killed that piece of shit man.
God,
she was with
it. Disgusting. Shortly after all of that went down, her mother died of liver cirrhosis due to being an alcoholic.
Well, I'd rather her died at Juana's hands, but I guess that's probably a miserable death. I'll take it.
You know, and Juana had no emotion when it came to her mother's death. She didn't really have any attachment to her. She didn't care about her.
I wouldn't either.
No. She did, however, harbor a very strong resentment towards her mother.
I'd probably go take a shit on her fucking grave or something. The final fuck you, bitch.
She always thought that if, you know, Jesta hadn't sold her off for mm-hmm. 3 beers, then she would have been spared years of trauma and abuse.
Oh, yeah. Her life could have been totally different.
Yeah.
I mean, maybe not that much better. Maybe. I don't know. But I'm sure it would have been somewhat better.
Better than, you know, being raped repeatedly for 4 years.
And knowing that your mom sold you for 3 fucking beers. I wouldn't even take $1 million for my dog.
Exactly.
Like,
hell, I probably wouldn't even take $10 million. Even though
for these crazy psychos.
Yeah.
Aww. We're going to have to post a picture of Heather's dogs on here because they're totally up here every time that we're podcasting. They're part of the crew. They're the sound team.
They are. Usually the ones panting in the background. She's a little calm today. I've got her on Prozac.
I'll say she had her meds. She had her pills. She's good.
Now that Juana's mom was dead, she took her son and moved to Mexico City. While she was there, she actually had 2 serious relationships, kind of like back-to-back, mm-hmm. one after the other. Both of these men, though, they were violent drunks, and they beat her.
Clearly she had a type, I guess.
Yeah, I guess.
She can't break the cycle.
Yeah, that's it, exactly. Mm-hmm.
She ended up. Still happens today to a lot of women.
Do what?
Said still happens today to a lot of women.
Yeah. She ended up leaving both men, and she tried to make it on her own for a little while. She ended up meeting a man by the name of Miguel Garcia, and for the first time, everything seemed to be looking up for her. They got married when Juana was 23, and they ended up having a daughter named Erica. Happiness didn't last with the two. They actually ended up separating 4 years later.
Aww.
You know, Juana looked after her two children as good as she could.
Right.
She worked in a chocolate factory for a little while, and then she decided to become a street vendor. She ended up going on to try and sell clothes, but that didn't work out. She actually said that when she worked with her boss, they used to sew pants and sell them at this place called the Soledad Cinema.
Was that like the market, I guess, or something?
I guess. It's weird. A cinema, you would
think.
I know. Think
I think of like a movie theater, but there goes the sound technicians, y'all.
So she said one day when they were delivering merchandise, she had made a mistake and he actually slapped her.
Fucking man again.
She ended up moving on to another job. She actually took on some cleaning jobs, you know, in people's homes. Mm-hmm. It was enough to keep her family fed. When she was 30, her stepfather died, which devastated her because she felt like he was the only one she could rely on.
Right. That she actually had an attachment to and could depend on.
Yeah. Within that same year, though, she fell in love again. She met Felix Ramirez. They actually ended up living together for more than 10 years and had two children together.
So at this point, she has four kids.
Mm-hmm. Jose, Marvin, and Emma. For a while, things were good for her. But she ended up leaving Felix when she was 42. She stayed in Mexico City, trying to make it on her own. I mean, she was single, illiterate, and had four kids.
Gosh, I can't even imagine.
And they were between the ages of 6 and 21. At this point, she decided she was done with men. Mm-hmm. And she was going to...
that I blame her there.
No. So. At this point, yeah, you're better off, honey.
Mm-hmm.
She, however, you know, vowed to give her children the home that she never had. She wanted them to have a stable, calm environment.
Mm-hmm.
She was the type of person to dress very conservatively. She never really stood out in a crowd. She was kind of a wallflower, I guess. She actually ended up being pretty much the opposite of her mother.
I could see that.
Yeah.
You know.
I mean, that much trauma, you're like... Right. Hell no, I never want to be that way.
Right, I want to do everything the opposite.
I never want to put my kids through that, you know?
Yeah, I'd be the same.
Yeah. She was very shy and introverted, and that really caused her to keep to herself a lot.
Well, I mean, she literally had no social skills.
Yeah,
you know?
That's true.
She never went to school. She was not allowed to go to the playground and play.
Yeah.
So
all she had was, like, the adults in her life, and they were terrible.
Right, exactly.
And then she was, you know, sold off to a man for a while.
At
so, yeah.
12? 12 when you still haven't even fully developed?
At this time, she just ended up focusing all of her energy on her kids. At one point, though, her oldest son, Jose Enrique, who helped her out a lot, died after a physical altercation when he was being mugged. He was actually beaten to death with a baseball bat.
Oh, my God.
And he was only 24.
That's so awful.
Yeah. And she always said that, you know, his death was, like, the saddest, worst moment of her life.
I can't imagine losing a child. You know, obviously my parents have gone through it, but, you know.
I mean, I know a couple people who have lost, you know, little. I think one was 4 when he died, and then the other one this year was almost 2. So,
oh, yeah. I remember you telling me about that. That's just awful. That's the worst kind of pain, I would assume. I hope I never have to experience it.
I hope not. Her second child, Erica, actually ended up marrying when she was pretty young, and she left home, but she still lived near her mom. And they actually had a good relationship by all accounts. Mm-hmm. So during the 1990s, Juana still had her two youngest children, Jose and Emma, that lived with her. In 1998, were some murders of elderly people in Mexico City that were just starting to come to light, like, just out of nowhere they started. The public actually thought there may be a serial killer on the loose. But the police were saying that these crimes are all unrelated.
Of course they were.
Funny enough, Juana actually lived in that neighborhood where the serial killer was striking. But apparently she wasn't very concerned about it. She said she had other things to deal with.
I think if a serial killer was in my neighborhood, I might feel differently, but...
I'd be pretty worried.
Yeah, me too. Definitely.
Yikes. She was working as a vendor, taking odd cleaning jobs, but it didn't really give her a lot of money. She was struggling to make ends meet. She actually ended up in a pretty desperate situation, and she decided to start committing petty crimes. She started off shoplifting, and then she robbed stores when they were closed, and eventually she moved on to robbing people's homes. And then she would sell what she stole on the street.
I mean, I feel like people might think I'm crazy for saying this, but if it came down between that and feeding my child...
Oh, yeah.
I would probably...
She's not the first nor the last to do that. Exactly. To provide for their children.
Yes,
I mean,
because your kids watch. Well, obviously not with her mom, but your kids should always come first. So, you know, I mean, almost can't fault her for that.
There are people who are actually decent, good people who've never done a bad thing in their life, who just fall on these hard times.
Right.
And they can't get help. And it's like the last resort.
And because we know our government sucks.
God.
Don't get us started on that. That's a whole nother rant.
Juana had a friend, Araceli Martinez, who would sometimes act as her accomplice. They would work together. In 1996, they came up with a plan to target elderly women that lived alone. They would dress up as nurses in order to gain the trust of these little elderly women so that they could get into their home. And once they were inside, one of the two would keep the victim company while the other one went around the house and took items.
Whatever they could find.
Yep.
See, this is what starts making me mad, because I love the grannies.
Wow.
You know, so...
That's one thing that angers me the most, taking advantage of old people.
Yes. And if you want to, like, rob someone else, because the little old grannies are the sweetest, and, you know.
I mean, some of them are
probably kinda... don't even have anything. Like, my mom's mom was a single, and she was never had, you know, anything.
Yeah.
And I would fucking kill someone if they tried to mess with her, which, I mean, she's dead now, but you know what I mean. Like, there's more better targets than the little old grannies.
Yeah. I just...
Like you
they're the easiest to take advantage of.
Yes, they took advantage of them because they knew they would probably be trusted.
Yep.
You know, so.
This hustle worked pretty good for them for a little while. Her friend Araceli, though, actually had her own little agenda. I've seen a couple of different sources say that she was friends with or she was in a relationship with this police officer.
Two-time bitch.
Yeah. Moises Flores Dominguez. Of course, he was corrupt. He was crooked.
Clearly.
Yeah. So those two actually ended up coming up with a plan to double-cross Juana. Juana actually committed a robbery by herself, and Flores was waiting for her outside the home. He knew she'd be there, of course.
Right.
Araceli.
Set that shit up.
He told Juana that she needed to give him 12,000 pesos or he would arrest her.
Which we know is only about $600 in U.S. dollars. Not a lot of money.
Not here.
That's about my electric bill for 2 months.
Oh my God. It's insane.
Well, you know, I keep it about 65, so.
Freeze.
It evens out in the winter because then I just don't turn the heat on.
Oh my God. So Juana needed to get this money in order to pay off Flores, and she couldn't really risk robbing homes anymore because he was keeping an eye on her.
Oh, yeah. He was probably going around like, oh, what's she doing today? Let me see how much I can milk out of her now.
What a dick. So she knew that it would take forever to pay him off because she didn't really have any money at all, and she's a single mother. her main concern is providing for her children.
Right. I got to make sure my kids eat dinner.
Yeah.
Not paying off this piece of shit.
So she ended up taking a job selling chocolates and popcorn at this place called Mexico Arena. I guess it's kind of like our Rupp Arena or whatever. Right. You know, they have different events mm-hmm. there. The pay wasn't really that great, but it was regular steady work and regular steady pay. It was also a decent environment to work in. You know, they had all these events and mm-hmm. it was kind of fun.
She wasn't getting her ass beat, I guess, by right. her boss, slapped the shit out of, so.
So, Mexico Arena actually hosted the city's Lucha Libre matches.
Nacho Libre.
Nacho Libre. That's what I always think of when I see that. She loved it. She just loved the spectacle. She loved watching every match. And as luck would have it, there was a promoter that spotted her selling popcorn one day. And they actually suggested that she try out wrestling for herself.
That's so cool.
So she was 5'9" and she had a fairly muscular build. Mm-hmm. So she was actually ideal for doing this.
Heck yeah.
She couldn't believe, you know, the opportunity that was brought up to her.
I'm sure it would be a lot more money too.
Mm-hmm. So she ended up taking weight training twice a week. She ended up with tremendous upper body strength. And at her best, she was able to lift about 220 pounds.
She's a strong bitch.
She chose the ring name La Dama del Silencio, which meant the Lady of Silence. She said that because she's shy and likes mm-hmm. to keep to herself all the time, she thought that that was a name that would best describe her.
I think
her.
That's very fitting.
Yeah.
For her, given yeah. her background and everything. Mm-hmm. Not really having friends or, you know, doing much, so.
Yeah. Her costume was pink and silver, and her mask was the shape of a butterfly. I can't wait for you to see these pictures.
I know! I want to see the pics.
She was ruthless in the ring. She actually won most of her matches. And Lucha Libre roughly translates to freestyle fighting, so anything goes. Mm-hmm. The fighters are either Tecnios or Rudos. Tecnios play it safe. They follow the rules. They're basically the heroes, if you will.
Oh, okay.
The Rudos make it their mission to break the rules, and they use dirty tricks.
They're like the they're villains. Mm-hmm. I'm sure that was her.
And this is all like WWE stuff.
Yeah.
In a television interview, Juana had said that she was Rudos to the core, basically declaring herself as like an outlaw.
Mm, I can see that.
Like you said, you thought the money was pretty good. Mm-hmm. She would earn between 300 to 500 pesos per fight. That's and not so much. At this point,
well, but it's probably more than what she made.
Oh yeah,
being a vendor and selling stuff. So mm-hmm.
at this point, for the first time in her life, she was actually making a pretty decent living,
mm-hmm.
and she was doing something that she loved. Throughout her whole life, she was the type of person, you know, the wallflower. Unseen. But when she took on, you know, this Lucha Libre, she actually became a person to be reckoned with. Like she felt like she was no longer a victim.
It was almost like an alter ego kind yeah. of, you know, like she had this totally separate person that was totally different than how she'd grown up. You know, she's not hiding in the background. Now she's out here kicking ass.
Yeah. She said that once she put on that mask, she felt like she was somebody special.
Mm-hmm. Someone totally different.
Juana adored the Catholic saint, La Santa Muerte, and used her as a lucky charm.
Does that mean something of death?
I think so, the saint of death.
Because Muerte means dead, right?
Mm-hmm.
If I'm correct.
Yeah.
I think.
Yeah. She also kept cinnamon sticks in a mesh bag with her, inviting abundance and good fortune to come her way.
That's very, yes, I agree with that.
Mm-hmm. The cinnamon in the door. In the
door
mm-hmm. at the first of the month.
Yep.
Just as Juana was becoming one of the most popular luchadoras in town, she ended up having a spinal injury. And the doctor mm-hmm. had said that if she didn't quit fighting, that she may very well end up paralyzed.
Damn.
This was, you know, devastating to her. And right. she wasn't ready to retire, but she also realized that, you know, it could get much worse if
yeah.
she doesn't stop.
She's going to have to.
But she also realized that the money's also going to stop. It was a setback for her, but she wanted to be able to stay as involved in Lucha Libre as she could. Mm-hmm. She would arrange events for the little smaller town fiestas, kind of working as a promoter when she wasn't working as a promoter, she was always ringside for the matches. By 2002, news reports of brutal killings of elderly women was just all over the front pages of the newspapers. In Alamos Colony, a woman was attacked and robbed and left for dead, but she survived. She was able to identify her assailant. It was a man 26 years old. His name was Alejandro Salvatierra. He was an ex-convict and had just been released from prison for robbery. So the police actually caught him, and he ended up being sent back to prison.
Was there any evidence that he actually did all this shit?
Just that one. I mean, she lived, so she was able to identify
him. Right, but
him.
That was the only one.
That was, as far as we know, that was the only one he was involved with because he was in prison before.
Right.
So the ones through the 90s couldn't have been him. I don't think. I don't know how long he was in prison for, but...
Interesting.
There was another story of Roberto Sanchez. And this guy posed as a healthcare professional in order to gain access into people's homes. He would assault these elderly ladies during the robberies, and sometimes he actually killed them. And he had a girlfriend, Alejandra Sanchez. She would sell what he stole on the black market. Both of them actually ended up getting caught when the dumbasses tried to pass off a check. They tried to cash a check of one of their victims.
Fucking idiots. I mean, I'm glad
they
got caught, but...
Right. Towards the end of 2002, another man by the name of Guillermo Buenrostro was in an argument with his elderly mother. He actually picked her up in this wrestling move called La Quebradora and dropped her onto the ground. And she was a little elderly lady. I mean, she was frail. So that...
I can just, like, imagine it in my head. Like, this little teeny tiny little old lady, like my little granny, being dropped.
Onto the ground. And that fall was just too much for her frail body to take. And she actually passed away in the hospital 4 days after that. What he didn't realize was that his niece had witnessed the fight. And she actually told the police what happened. So he was caught, but he didn't get caught for another 3 years.
That's fucked up. Three years. How can be on the run for 3 years and not get caught?
Yeah. But he ended up being convicted, so he went to prison.
Well, I hope he's still there. Or I hope someone shanked his mother by
That same year, there was a 79-year-old woman who was attacked in her home in Mexico City's historic district. Somebody knocked on her door and claimed to be a milkman. It wasn't. It was a man by the name of Jose Sanchez, who was a thief, and he demanded that the woman give him her jewelry. She screamed, and then the neighbors heard her, and they actually called the police, and the assailant, Jose, grabbed the little old lady's gold earrings from her ears, and then he tried to escape, but the police actually ended up apprehending him.
I hope they beat the shit out of him.
Yep.
When they caught his little bitch ass. Like, how much little dick syndrome do you have to be to pick on grannies?
That's what I was like. These are a lot of people assaulting these little elderly women through the years. I mean, by November of 2002, another retired lady was murdered. Her case wasn't really the same as the others. Maria Anaya was found strangled in her home. Nothing really valuable was taken from her home, though. The forensic evidence showed that whoever killed her actually strangled her using only their hands.
Well, we know it's going to be someone strong.
Yeah.
To do that.
Yeah.
I don't feel like I could kill someone with my hands.
That would take a real...
Rage?
Lack of emotion. There were no signs of any forced entry, and the police really had no idea of who would be responsible for this. There was just... over the next few years, the murders just continued to increase. Sometimes they were months apart, and then sometimes they were only weeks apart. Others occurred within days of each other. So everybody in Mexico City was, you know, pretty much on edge. They couldn't understand who would be targeting the abuelas.
The grannies.
The grannies.
Abuelas.
Yes. So March 2003 was another group of murders that happened. The homes were ransacked. The killer was able to access the safes at multiple murder scenes. There were documents strewn all on the floor. but it didn't look like anything valuable was really taken from these mm-hmm. scenes. On February 20th, 2004, 75-year-old Alicia Castillo let her killer into her home. She had let her dog outside so that the dog wouldn't bother whoever was there to visit her. She ended up strangled and her body was left on the bed in her bedroom. She was finally reported missing and the police went to her house to do a welfare check and they actually ended up finding her murdered. All the victims were over the age of 70. And at this point, the police couldn't ignore it anymore. I mean, right. They had to be connected in some way. Between March 2003 and March 2004, 9 women had died.
That's a lot.
Yeah. And of course, these murders go as far back as, 1998.
Right, back in the day when Lana said she wasn't concerned with it.
Right. And, they've arrested several people.
But the murders continue.
Yeah. They, the police were like, this is still going on, but they didn't want to admit to the public that there was probably a serial killer out there.
I feel like they never want to admit it. Like, what's going on in Missouri right now?
Yeah.
With African-American women disappearing.
Yep, and which that's not really even been in the news lately.
No.
And then there's a possible serial killer out in California right now, too, so.
Don't hear anything about it.
I only heard the one news story, and I actually haven't looked into it much, but to see if anything else has come about, but.
They don't want to admit it, ever. Because it makes them look dumb as fuck,
In March 2004, this lady by the name of Araceli Garcia, she was 40 years old. She ended up being arrested and convicted of the murder of an 81-year-old lady named Gloria Ramirez.
But this is a different Araceli than Juana's old accomplice.
Yep.
Totally different.
Yes.
Okay.
Because at first, when I read that, I was like, wait a minute. Mm-hmm. She'd be about the right age, but the last name's different. Yeah. She was actually convicted in the murder of an 81-year-old by the name of Gloria Ramirez. She posed as a social worker, and she met her victim in the park. She walked her home. Once they were in the lady's house, mm-hmm. Araceli robbed her and killed her. There was another murder, a 75-year-old Maria Quezada. There was a fingerprint taken from that murder scene that actually matched Araceli. She was convicted of both crimes.
Okay.
Both of the victims had cash and jewelry stolen before they were strangled. Now, Vasquez, she admitted to these robberies, but she maintained that she never killed anybody. Mm. Of course, the judge was like, bullshit.
That's bullshit.
You're not gonna... No, they don't just magically strangle themselves after you leave.
So, let me guess. You just happen to rob someone and someone else just happened to come in behind you and kill them? Okay.
Yeah, I don't think so.
No.
She ended up being sentenced to 23 years in prison. But even after her arrest, these attacks were still happening.
Mm-hmm.
One right after the other. And all these victims, again, elderly women, they were over the age of 70. They all lived alone. And the police were putting together these witness statements and theorized that the killer must be posing as some sort of social worker or a government employee who was there to do a health check. Because at this time, the Mexican government was actually implementing these new government...
Almost like assistance programs or something?
Programs, yeah. It was a new government.
Helps them.
Yeah, it was something that the Mexican government was implementing at the time.
Because I'm even wondering, how these people are pretending to be social workers and getting in. Because, like...
Or nurses. Yeah. Like, showing up, like, hey, I'm going to give you a health check. What?
I'd be like, first of all, I don't answer my door.
No, I hide.
So, unless I'm expecting you... But if it's something that they think they're going to benefit from, then obviously they're going to let the people in and open their safes or do whatever they need to do because they think they're from the, quote, government,
Once the assailant was inside, they asked the victims for their official papers, which meant that they would unlock their safes.
Look, if somebody came to my house and asked for some shit, I'd be like, motherfucker, I don't know. I'm going to have to go to Frankfurt and get a new birth certificate because I have no idea where it is.
Right.
I'm not that well organized.
I'm definitely not.
I got a passport and an ID. And if you need more than that, you're going to come back in about 2 weeks.
Once the safe door was opened, the victims ended up being strangled using whatever was accessible to the killer. Things like an electric cord, a telephone cord, curtain cord. At one point, a stethoscope was used. The killer would ransack the house afterwards, but they would only take small little trinkets and maybe some jewelry. These items kind of seemed to the authorities to be more like trophies rather than something that they would sell
and mm-hmm. get money from.
Even though these crime scenes were very similar in a way, the killer kind of started to change up their MO a little bit. In the case of 84-year-old Maria Tizapan.
These names are so hard.
They are.
Especially for our Eastern Kentucky accents.
On July 3rd, 2004, she was found strangled and slumped over the dining room table. Oddly enough, one of her porcelain dolls was placed on another dining room chair, and it was facing her body.
That's weird.
Yeah. A couple weeks later, at the end of August that year, 84-year-old Maria Reynoso was strangled with a belt. She was strangled with so much force that her dentures fell out of her mouth onto the floor. An effigy of the Virgin Mary was placed on a table facing the body, and votive candles were lit, and it kind of made the room look more like a funeral mm-hmm. than a murder scene.
I'm going to say, yeah, that seems like a remembrance or a funeral type thing.
On September 12th, 2004, the police caught a street vendor, Mario Tobolis. He was charged with the murders of three elderly women, all over the age of 70. The media called him the nurse because he dressed up as a female nurse and wore a blonde wig. Police had actually been looking for him since a murder that took place in 1998. In his hotel room, they found a notebook with the names and addresses of prospective victims.
Well, he was on the run for a long-ass time then, wasn't he? Yeah.
On the cover of the journal, there was a drawing of a faceless nurse, and there was a phrase written below it that said, "God gave me the authority to exterminate."
I don't think so, but, whatever, buddy.
Even with him being arrested, the murders didn't stop.
Why is everybody killing the grandmas, damn it?
I don't understand.
God, all they want to do is feed people.
At some point, you gotta wonder if they had a number of serial killers all doing the same damn thing. I mean, this is insane, the amount of people that have been arrested for doing this, and it's still happening.
Right.
Police was trying to find similarities between, the unsolved cases. All these attacks took place in the daytime. All the victims were lower to middle class, and they were retired. They lived alone.
Mm-hmm.
A lot of times, they lived near public parks or gardens. There was a particular knot that the cables were knotted up in when the killer was strangling the victims. I mean, it was the most basic knot you can have, which meant that the killer just wasted no time. And
obviously, they weren't like a sailor or a seaman. Not that kind of seaman, people. Get your head out of the gutter.
They thought that this person was also not very sophisticated. They were able to lift some fingerprints from some of the crime scenes, but there was no match in their existing police records for the fingerprints.
Mm-hmm.
There was a weird coincidence for three of the victims. They all owned a print of an 18th century painting by artist Jean-Baptiste Greuze. It's called Boy in a Red Waistcoat. A lot of these victims were also Spanish expats.
Which means they...
They moved from Spain.
To Mexico City.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. Okay.
Like, as an American, if I were to move to Portugal and mm-hmm. give up my citizenship here, I'm an expat, because...
I mean, that kind of sounds like a really good idea to move out of this fucking hellhole. Just saying.
So the cops were wondering if these attacks could have been driven by some xenophobia. Mm-hmm. They weren't real sure.
Right.
The public, of course, was really putting the pressure on the police by 2005. The media had gotten involved with all these stories. They actually named the killer El Maravijitas, the little old lady killer.
Mm.
Police ended up releasing a profile, hoping that, people in Mexico City would be able to help. They thought that, of course, it was a man. They thought he was between 40 and 50. They didn't think that he had a permanent job, and if he were to actually find a job, then it wasn't a very well-paying one. They believe that he traveled on public transportation and that he did not live in Mexico City.
See, that profiler needs to be fucking fired, okay?
Why would you think the person doesn't live in the city?
Right. Why? What was the reasoning behind that? Why?
That doesn't make sense. I mean, they would have to know the city.
And what are they going to do? Get on the bus and, like, go back home with all this shit, whatever they took?
Like, that's not...
That makes literally zero sense. None.
The chief prosecutor of Mexico City, which is Bernardo Batiz, he said that the killer had a brilliant mind, and he was quite clever and careful.
Or how about the police just fucking suck at this point?
Basically. They felt that the killer was a psychopath and actually had no remorse. Well, duh. Batiz believed that this killer was able to gain the trust of his victims, of course, by posing as that government official, and was offering to assist them in signing up to these new welfare programs. September 28, 2005, 82-year-old Carmen Miguel was found dead. She was the mother of a prominent criminologist, so the cops really had to step up their game.
They're like, oh shit, yeah. We actually gotta do our job now.
She was a well-to-do widow who lived alone in a big house, and she was not the typical victim. So the police started to think that maybe this killer is moving on to the wealthier neighborhoods in Mexico City. 2 days later, there ended up another murder. 85-year-old Guadalupe Contreras was walking home, and she was seen with a muscular woman wearing a pink blouse. Most of the witnesses who saw them said that they thought that this was a man dressed as a woman.
Because of the stature?
Yeah.
And just the build and everything?
Mm-hmm. Police ended up setting up a task force to try and hunt this person down. It was called Parks and Gardens, of course, because a lot of these victims live near parks and gardens. They were handing out pamphlets. They were talking to the elderly residents. You know, they were warning them to be wary of strangers. Don't let strange people in your house.
I don't even like strange people. I don't even want to, like, smile at them, so,
no.
You know.
They even had plainclothes officers that were patrolling the streets that to look for any sign of this killer. There were other witnesses that would come forward and say that they saw a person near the murder scene just before or just after it took place. Some of the statements had said that this person was a masculine female who wore a wig. So police started to think that maybe their perpetrator was a transgender person. Mm-hmm. A composite sketch was compiled from the witness statements. And the sketch was released to the media, but they depicted the person as a male. The man had short dyed blonde hair with a mole and a stethoscope around his neck. They also released another sketch that they tweaked to make the subject female.
Because they thought it was a man dressing like a woman.
Right. The head of inquiry, who is Renato Sales, denied that police were placing elderly people in shopping malls as bait.
That's so messed up.
One woman actually came forward, and she said that agents paid her between 100 to 200 pesos to serve as bait.
Which is literally nothing.
Right. So I think Renato is lying, and I bet they did try to put elderly people into those situations.
Because they're so desperate for money, they're probably like, okay, I'll do it for that. You know?
And of course, the public consistently criticized the police for refusing to admit that there has to be a serial killer.
Right.
And police were just, they saw the link between the murders as something that was sensationalized in the media. And that was it. They didn't, I guess they didn't feel that the links were really connected. It was just something that the media was sensationalized. There were some steps they did take. It kind of showed that they did consider there may be a serial killer out there. They actually brought in French detectives who had worked on a case in France because the case in France had many similarities. And in this way, they came up with another profile of the killer.
So this is now three profiles we've got.
At this time, they said it was a man with homosexual preferences, a victim of childhood physical abuse, lived surrounded by women. He could have had a grandmother or lived with an elderly person, and has resentment to that feminine figure and possesses great intelligence.
Okay, so they got what, two things right?
Yeah, physical abuse.
Yes, and resentment.
Resentment towards a woman.
How do these people have jobs at this point?
The killer in France, he actually killed and robbed somewhere between 18 and 21 elderly women in Paris from 1984 to 87. He was raised by his grandmother, but he moved in with his mom when he was 10. Mm-hmm. And then she actually persuaded his father to take him in. So he had a very unstable upbringing, and that was seen as his motive for the killings. And he was bisexual. So Mexico was thinking, oh, well, the killer here must have a fairly similar...
Must be the same thing.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. Police ended up arresting close to about 40 transgender sex workers. Mm. None of their fingerprints matched the prints at the scenes, though. And so when the press got wind of all of this, they started coming out. Well, they accused the police of being on a, quote-unquote, ham-fisted, unproductive swoop of the city's transvestite prostitutes.
I feel like I agree with that.
Yeah. There was public outcry about this whole thing. People thought that the police were transphobic and that was what was, you know, driving this whole witch hunt of the transgender mm-hmm. community.
That's a good term, witch hunt.
Mm-hmm. About 30 of the city's transgender people ended up staging a sit-in at the front entrance of police headquarters in protest of the abuse that they had suffered under questioning.
Mm.
So on October 18th of that year, another murder happened. If all the cases that happened before this one had been connected, this would have been the 31st in 2.5 years.
Ooh, that's a lot.
92-year-old Maria Hernandez was severely beaten before being strangled to death.
Oh, 92. Poor little old thing.
The killer left her front door wide open. I mean, at this point, either they're becoming very reckless.
Right.
Or they were becoming very arrogant. Mm-hmm. One of the two.
Maybe a little bit of both.
Yeah. During the holidays, like during Christmas and stuff, the killings actually stopped. Which, you know, Wanda's home with their kids.
Gotta open presents.
Yeah. Police were thinking that either the suspect, you know, had family connections somewhere else mm-hmm. and had went home for the Christmas
break. Was out of town.
Right. Or they thought maybe the killer died. One could be so lucky.
Right.
Police were checking the fingerprints of everybody that came into the morgue in the city just to make sure.
Mm-hmm.
But nothing matched. And then come January, the killer started up again. January 25th, 2006. There was a man who rented a place from a lady by the name of Anna Maria Alfaro. He came home to find her strangled with a stethoscope. She was 82. When he got there, he actually seen a woman running from the scene and he ran after her. Luckily, he ended up seeing some police officers that were patrolling the mm-hmm. area and he told them what had happened. So they were actually able to run this woman down and capture her right about as she was getting ready to go into the subway station.
Wow. I just got her then, didn't
yep. I? Yep. Turns out it's 48-year-old Juana Barraza. She had pension forms and a card identifying her as a social worker on her person. And the guy who seen her running from the scene, he was actually able to identify that, yes, that is the woman mm-hmm. he saw leaving the home. Oddly enough, Juana didn't really seem fazed by being under arrest. Like, she could have cared less. The only thing she was concerned about was her daughter, who was at school.
Mm-hmm.
And she was asking the officers if she could arrange for someone to go pick her daughter up.
That's so weird. I wonder if she, like, knew she was going to get caught or something.
It's very...
Or she thought, I'm going to get out of this.
Probably.
You know?
That would be what I would think.
Mm-hmm.
The officers agreed to let her, you know, arrange that. But they were really perplexed by her just... Her nonchalantness. Yeah. They were like, I mean, does she not realize what's happening here? Does she not, you know, realize the gravity of the situation?
Right.
So they took her fingerprints and they actually were able to match her prints to prints that were found at her final crime scene. But they also matched up with prints that were found at least 10 other murder scenes.
So they could confirm for sure she was at least 10 of the others.
Mm-hmm.
Okay.
The police searched Juana's house, and they found a trophy room, kind of. There were newspaper clippings with the headlines that were about the murders. They also found items that had been taken from the victims' homes. And there was an altar honoring two saints, Jesus Malverde and Santa Muerte. At her home, police also ended up finding a white coat that was from the Mexican Social Security Institute. They found a pair of white shoes and a stethoscope.
How'd she get all this stuff?
I don't know.
Like, if you can't afford to feed your kids, how are you going to get all this stuff, you know?
She's some kind of a, obviously she's an accomplished thief, so maybe she did steal it.
Stole it from somewhere or something?
The people in Mexico City were just, they were shocked as shit that the serial killer was a woman.
Like, giving them all these fucking, profiles, and none of them literally match.
They're out here looking for a man.
Right. A man, or a man dressed as a woman, or a transvestite, or whatever, you know, transgender, and none of them match.
The Mexico City prosecutors said that the fingerprint evidence, of course, linked her to at least 10 of those scenes. Mm-hmm. But there were as many as 40 murders that were attributed to her. Different people have said different things, but it has been said that when she was first interrogated, she confessed to the murder of Ana Maria Alfaro, as well as the murders of three other women, but that was it.
So she supposedly only confessed four.
To four total, yeah. She told the police that she went to Ana Maria's home to look for work, basically. Mm-hmm. Juana said that Ana Maria offered her 22 pesos to launder 12 items, and Juana told her it wasn't enough. She says that Ana Maria made this snide remark, that's how cats always are, they want to earn too much. And I guess it pissed her off.
Right.
So she took the stethoscope and strangled the little old lady.
Filled
the
shit out of her.
Yeah. Juana was confronted with a list of all the murders. She denied any involvement. She tried to say that she never acted as a social worker.
But she was caught with all the shit.
Yeah. When she was asked about the social worker's coat that was found at her home, she couldn't explain it. She went on saying that she never had any official documents on her when she was arrested. The police planted it on her.
Mm. I mean, police can be corrupt, but, you know.
Oddly enough, these forged documents that she had couldn't have been done by her because she couldn't read or write. So they were thinking she must have an accomplice that's helped her out with this.
Somebody's helped her get this shit.
Yeah. She obviously can't do it on her own. She ended up telling the police that in mid-2005, she became involved with Jose Herrera, known as El Frijol, or The Bean.
The Bean.
The Bean.
I would not be okay with that name.
The Bean.
I do not want to be called The Bean. Ever.
He would drive her to the homes of the victims, and whatever she would steal out of the house, they would share it. So the police wondered if he was the one who maybe helped her forge the ID cards.
Somebody did.
Yeah. So as soon as the news came out that the La Maravijitas had been captured, El Frijol, the bean, ran.
I just imagine this little, soup bean with,
Soup bean.
With legs, running through the streets.
Police ended up catching up with him a couple days later, and they ended up arresting him. Juana, all the way through her throughout this whole ordeal, she claimed that all these little old lady murders were committed by multiple people over the years. I mean, she's not totally wrong.
So she's not wrong because there were, but clearly she did a lot.
I mean, they got a lot of these people who were doing it, and yet this continued. So you're pretty much what's left,
right?
And she couldn't understand why the cops were only going after her. And she told them that, you know, with her arrest, that these killings wouldn't stop. But they actually did. There were a couple theories going around that maybe she was aware of the serial killer. Like, maybe she wasn't the one in 1998. Mm-hmm. But she would copy his method and take it on as her own.
I feel like she was the one in 1998. Because she wasn't concerned about it.
She wasn't worried about it.
She wasn't worried about it.
Yeah. It wouldn't surprise me.
I mean, she, to all of her faults, she is a devoted mother. So you would think, okay, even if, you know, maybe I'm a piece of shit, I care about my kids, so I'm going to be worried if there is a serial killer in my neighborhood, just for the simple fact that
safety
I'm going to worry
my
about my kids, you know? Yeah. So, I don't know.
And it didn't really seem to worry her that this person could, I don't know. And then maybe she thought, well, I'm not a little elderly lady. Why would they want anything to do with me?
Maybe that too.
Who knows? She chose her victims because she associated elderly ladies with her mother and she wanted to take revenge on her mom. She wanted to help society by getting rid of these women.
But these, we don't know these women were bad women like her mom.
I know.
You know?
They were probably wonderful abuelas.
Cooking dinner on Sundays, you know?
Juana would hang out in public places. And once she would figure out whether or not a woman was alone, she would follow her home. And she would offer to help carry in groceries or help with any type of chores that needs to be done.
Whatever,
or,
just to get in the house.
Yep. In total, Juana was suspected of murdering between 42 and 48 people.
God, that's a lot of people.
And she showed absolutely no remorse.
How do you even have time to kill that many people?
I mean,
if you got kids.
For real. You know? I guess while they're in school, mommy's going to go murder. I mean, these happened during the daytime for the most part. So her kids, I guess, were in school. And she's like, well,
let's go kill someone today.
Yeah. Basically killed just for the thrill of it in order to punish her mother. Which, again...
She's dead.
She's dead. She doesn't fucking care at this point.
Right. She doesn't know. It's not like her mom's riding up on a cloud watching over her. Like, let me see what my daughter's doing.
And this was all but confirmed by her saying that she hated older women. Mm-hmm. She said, when I saw them, I felt a lot of courage. And even more when they showed superiority or they believed that they could humiliate me for their money. So,
she took back some of the power that she had lost as a child with her mother.
Yeah.
And being, you know, so
she didn't get
down.
To murder her mom. She didn't get to take back the power on her actual mother. So this was the next best thing. She actually had a psychological report that stated that her mother's treatment of her and the fact that she was sold into a life of abuse was unforgivable to Juana. And that being sold for three beers was just too much. And she was just in a rage. Police were able to use her fingerprints and determine that the first murder they could tie her to was in November 2002. And that was when she broke into the home of Maria Anaya. And supposedly Maria made an insulting remark to Juana. Again, she got pissed off and she snapped. And she ended up strangling that little lady with her bare hands. So it's that first murder in 2000. Yeah. She actually didn't kill again after that one for another 3 months. But when she did kill, she was relentless. And sometimes she would kill as many as four victims in 4 weeks' time.
That's
like one a week.
Insane.
Her trial ended up kicking off in the spring of 2008. She was accused of 30 murders.
Ooh.
She only admitted to one at trial.
She changed her story quite a bit.
I know.
From 3 to 9 to 1.
To 4. Yeah. She said that the only one she did was the one where she was actually caught.
Mm-hmm.
She also said she never admitted to killing the other three people. Her defense team tried to get her declared insane. Because, I mean, really, at this point, that's all they got.
Right, yeah.
Psychological evaluation was done, but it actually concluded that this bitch was of sound mind. Like, she knew exactly what she was doing.
Mm-hmm. Period. She might not have a high IQ, but she's not.
She's not crazy.
Insane. Yeah.
The insanity plea went bye-bye.
Mm-hmm.
In Mexican courts, there's only a judge. There's no jury.
Which
and,
I did not know that.
Yeah. And criminal cases are presented with a prosecution and a defense the same as they are here. A lot of people felt that Juana's case was very much a trial by media.
Mm-hmm.
When she was arrested, the police held a press conference. And they made Juana stand next to this plastic bust that they had made of the supposed suspect.
That's so weird.
They had this bust made, you know, back when they were still investigating the murders. You know, I guess when they come up with the composite.
Mm-hmm.
The police even made sure during this press conference that both Juana and the bust were in red sweaters.
That's so
and there are pictures of her standing next to this.
Well, you need to post that. So
yeah, I will.
Because that's weird.
Then the media also posted photos of Juana reenacting the murder of Ana Maria.
How did they get her to do that?
The cops made her do it. And they released it to the press, and then the press printed them. And this was all before she even stood trial. So, of course, everybody in Mexico City was like, oh, this bitch is guilty.
Right,
even before the trial. I mean, she was, but still.
Right.
On March 31st, 2008, she ended up being found guilty of 16 murders and aggravated burglary, including 11 additional counts of murder. And the most damning evidence that the police had, of course, to connect her to any of these were the fingerprints that were found. Juana had said in court that, "I killed one little old lady, not the others." And when they asked her what her motive was, she just said, "I got angry." That's one way to put it, Juana.
Right?
She ended up getting a 759-year prison sentence, the longest punishment ever given in Mexican history.
See, that just blows my mind.
I know.
That's the longest ever.
Well, and typically, the maximum penalty, I guess, that you have to serve in Mexico is 50 years. So, even though she had 759 years, really, she the max she could serve is 50. So, it's unlikely she'll ever get out of prison again unless she makes it to 98 years old. When the verdict was read, she said, "May God forgive me and not forget me." When Juana was arrested and went to jail, her two youngest children that lived with her went to live with their older sister, Erica.
Oh, okay.
Juana is serving her time in Santa Marta Jail, which is a facility that's directly adjacent to a male prison. The prisoners are encouraged to socialize, which is...
I feel like it's just going to be a giant orgy. Like, everybody's just going to be fucking.
Like, exactly.
That's not that's not prison, okay? That's just, like, college.
So Juana became romantically involved with a male prisoner. They were married in 2015 at a mass wedding arranged by the penitentiary system. Who does this?
I have no fucking clue. If I ever go to jail, I guess send me to Mexico. I don't know. Because it doesn't really sound all that bad. You can fuck. You can get married.
It's the craziest thing.
It's so wild.
The couple only... They divorced after only 1 year of marriage.
I feel like that was probably just doomed from the beginning. Doomed
from the start.
Yeah.
So, supposedly these days, Juana passes her time by selling quesadillas to fellow inmates on Mondays to make a little extra money.
Back to being a vendor.
Yeah.
In prison.
In prison. That's the story of Juana Barraza.
I feel bad for her upbringing, but, you know.
Oh, for sure. I mean, like we've talked about a lot, that a lot of these people with this mental predisposition grow up in these horrible childhoods that just...
It destroys
breaks
them.
Breaks them. Yeah,
it does. Literally.
So, that's her story. And that
she could have found better people to kill. That's what I'm going to say.
Damn right.
Be a Dexter.
Be a Dexter.
We need shirts that say that. Hashtag be a Dexter.
Oh.
You need to add that to our to your Etsy shop. Which, by the way, Heather can tell you all about her Etsy shop and our Cocktails and Killers swag.
So, I do have an Etsy shop. And I do sell t-shirts, sweatshirts, hoodies. I do have a true crime section on there, and I've put up a couple of Cocktails and Killer shirts.
And they're so cute!
And now I'm going to put up hashtag
be a
Dexter.
Yes!
I try to add stuff every week, so, you know, just keep checking back. It is called Black Swan T-Shirt Company. Black Swan T-Shirt Co. is probably the best way to find it on there. But yeah, go check it out if you want.
We'll post a link on all of our social media,
yeah,
so that you can find it.
Definitely. So check it out.
Okay.
All right. Awesome. Well, that'll do it for this week. I'm super excited for next week.
I know. Next week we're going to talk about something that has some Kentucky ties. So tune in next week.
He's
Thanks for listening.
Thanks, guys. Bye.
Bye.